That was a piece called Prep Gwarlek, music of Aphex Twin, here arranged by Courtney Orlando, a member of Alarm Will Sound, and that was performed by Alarm Will Sound from their groundbreaking album Acoustica. Welcome to Relevant Tones. I'm Seth Bosted, and I'm going to be celebrating the 25th anniversary of this groundbreaking ensemble, Alarm Will Sound, and I'm talking with artistic director and conductor Alan Pearson about the group's history, their mission, some of their wonderful recordings, and especially about a brand new recording they have coming out featuring a piece written for them by Donika Dennehy called Land of Winter, which is also the name of the album. So let's jump right in and talk to Alan Pearson about this incredible group, Alarm Will Sound. I mean, how did Alarm Will Sound start? What was the initial impetus, and how has it changed over time?
Yeah, I mean, well, we were a group of friends in school together. You know, we were all at the Easton School of Music in the 90s and early 2000s. And a few of us had started the student-run organization called OSEA that started at a time when there wasn't a lot of new music at Eastman. And so we felt like there was a gap that needed to be filled, and we were excited to do it. And it so happened that we were doing this, like, you know, unbeknownst to us, right at a moment when there was a tremendous interest in teaching students how to become entrepreneurs. You know, that was a sort of new idea at that point. And the dean of the school, Jim Underkoffler, was really behind it. And so when we came to him and said, hey, we want to do this, he saw an opportunity to, you know, help us. And he believed in what we were doing. And also at the same time to further the school's, you know, new mission of supporting and training student entrepreneurship. And so we were really lucky and got a lot of support. And you know, like, did some amazing things during, like, you know, 6 years at the Eastman School when we were students. And, you know, we had Steve Reich come in, did a big concert with him. That was a transformative experience for all of us. You know, performed tons of you know, premieres and student works. And, you know, and then started to do things that were getting noticed by a larger world. And so, like, we started getting opportunities to play in New York. And then, you know, we had this moment towards the end of, we were all sort of different, you know, we were all different ages and different points in school, but, like, we were starting to leave. And it was, you know, I was getting close to leaving. And, you know, we had this moment of having to figure out what to do with this thing. And, you know, it seemed sort of too big a sacrifice to just walk away. But we also didn't want to, you know, we wanted the thing that we created to continue to exist for a new generation of students. And so we ended up spinning off Alarm Will Sound as a new organization that came out of the community that we had developed through that work at OSEA. And OSEA still exists. OSEA, you know, is a, you know, student-run new music ensemble at the Eastman School to this day. And then, you know, Alarm Will Sound became a group of alumni who went off and did their own thing.
That's really cool. It's like a two-pronged legacy, right? Because you have the new music ensemble still continuing at Eastman, but you have this level orchestra that's gone on and done amazing things too.
Yeah, it's cool. And I continue to meet, you know, people who are in OSEA or have, you know, been gone through the OSEA organization. And it's cool to see how it's evolved. And, you know, occasionally I get back and get to see concerts. And it's really meaningful to have a legacy. And, you know, to see, like, that has so changed beyond anything we could imagine. And it's really rewarding to see, you know, new generations of students, you know, take it on and make it their own thing year after year.
Mm-hmm. And so how did the missions, you know, change over time? I mean, from the beginning, it's kind of, you know, friends, students getting together to play. And then it's like, okay, this is becoming a real thing. You know, and we're working with these big name composers and getting some press. I mean, at what point do you decide, okay, you know, we're going to stake our claim now in the contemporary music world, and what enclave, or what, you know, kind of what's your niche in that world? What were you all thinking at that time? I mean, obviously the orchestra thing, right? I mean, a larger ensemble, but what else?
Yeah. I mean, so the original idea was kind of inspired by Steve Reich. He came as a guest to the school in 1999, and you know, he said this thing to us that really stuck in all of our minds, which is, you know, like every major European country has, you know, a like national new music ensemble that tours the country, that plays this repertoire and develops this repertoire. You know, there's the Ensemble Moderne in Germany, there's the Ensemble Antique Soprano in France, and there's the London Sinfonietta in the UK. And those were the three biggies at that point. And he said, America needs that. And I think you guys should do it. So that was, you know, that was the initial impetus. And, you know, that was sort of the core of what we set out to do. You know, beyond that, I think we had a couple of particular passions that really have stuck with us that haven't changed that much. You know, one is that we really wanted it to be a player-led ensemble and a band in the sense of a collaborative group of musicians who set the course of the organization together. Yeah, another like early passion of ours that has really stuck with us is a belief in open borders approach to music. You know, it's quaint to talk about now, but like when Alarm Will Sound started, there really was still a feeling that, you know, when you started an ensemble, you sort of put your stake in the ground aesthetically in a certain place, and that was who you were, what you were going to play. And like, you know, you could you know, do the more like uptown European thing, or you could do the more like downtown bang on a can thing. And it sounds so old-fashioned to even talk about it now, but like we knew we didn't want to do that, and we wanted part of our identity to be about breadth and about embracing the widest range we could of music that was being created today, and saying, no, this is our repertoire. And that, you know, that's remained a big part of Alarm Will Sound. So, you know, when we, I think it was in 2005 that we put out the Acoustica album, you know, the arrangements of the music of Aphex Twin. And that was a major calling card and a big moment for us. And, you know, a real like way of putting a stake in the ground and saying like, we are asserting that all of this is our repertoire, and that all of this is great music that, you know, should be played in the world's great halls.
Thank you.
Let's go back to the Acoustica album. I mean, you know, I remember when that came out. I mean, it was, you know, it made a big splash. What was the impetus for it? Like whose idea was it? Was there somebody particularly in the ensemble that was smitten with Aphex Twin? And, you know, how it came about?
Yeah, it was two members of the ensemble, neither of whom are in the ensemble anymore, sadly. One was Dennis DeSantis, who now is, he works at Ableton, actually. Dennis was our percussionist, one of our original percussionists, who I think doesn't play anymore, but he works at Ableton as their evangelist, and I think he's their lead evangelist and communicator, and so he's gotten deep into the electronic music world, and Dennis was a big Aphex Twin fan, and it was him and Caleb, who was one of our violinists at the time, who came to the group with this idea. And we had a lot of trepidation about it. There was a real fear that it would be silly, you know, that it would be goofy. That I remember the phrase that passed around. I don't know where this came from, but the phrase that passed around in the group was, the San Francisco Symphony plays the Bee Gees. I don't know if that actually happened, if that was a real thing or not. But we had this image that somehow that conjured up of classical musicians trying to play music that really didn't need them and that they weren't great at, and that they were that trying to play music that they were not good at expressing. And so we just had these fears of the work, the performance sounding cheesy and shallow, and it diminished the original.
How did who transcribed them? I mean, because, you know, again, the it's in the title. I mean, that you're going to translate this to instruments, and some of the effects are just marvelous.
It very much a collaborative effort. We, you know, there were different arrangers for every piece, some inside the group, some outside the group. And I was really hands-on, and you know, we made a decision as a group that then I felt like it was my job to enforce. And I sometimes got in retrospect maybe a little more intense about that than I needed to, which was we were going to listen to every detail of these tracks, and that was how we were going to make this work deep and worthwhile. It was we're not just going to we're not just going to play the tune and play the harmony. No, what makes Aphex Twin great is the tremendous amount of detail and sonic ingenuity. And we are going to use everything we can possibly think of to do with our instruments to realize that. And every time we're confronted with a sound that we don't know how to make, we're going to figure it out. We're going to pull our instruments apart, go to Home Depot, figure out what is the thing that we can do that is the best analog to that sound that we're hearing. So it was a very intense process that, there were workshops, there was lots and lots of back and forth with, all the composers and arrangers who worked on those. And it was, very, in a way, very inefficient, and, maybe a kind of time and attention is sort of natural for a group that is full of musicians in their 20s, and out of school with a lot of time and energy on their hands.
Yeah, definitely. I was just thinking, another thing that's changed in the 25 years that you all have been doing this is, when you first started out, a lot of groups would not talk to the audience. You know, the idea from the musician's perspective was, I'm responsible for the notes on the page, and that's it. And if the audience doesn't know this music, then screw them, and it works somewhat for their traditional repertoire, but it does not work for new music, right? Because you're really, how could they know, how could they have the background for this? And so, Alarm Will Sound to me is one of the early groups that was kind of no, we're going to be more engaging on stage. We're not just going to come out and play, we're going to talk to the audience, engage with the audience. And it just feels like you were an earlier, early progenitor of this kind of idea of actually engaging with the audience.
That's really nice to hear. That's really nice to hear. That certainly is how we think of it. So it's cool to hear that it's seen in the world that way. I mean, yeah, I remember when I first started doing this, encountering, you know, older musicians who, you know, were like the age that I am now, who had this, you know, at the time it seemed to me very and kind of entitled perspective on the world, which, you know, came from growing up in an age where, like, I think it was easier to make a living as a musician than it is now, or even was then, which is that, like, you know, hey, like, I went to school, I learned how to do this thing that I do, which is to, like, you know, play music well and, like, you know, read what's on the page in front of me well. And, like, you know, that's what I do. And, like, I'm going to show up and expect to have a job and, like, be paid for that. Thank you. And that's it. And I can clock out and go home. And, you know, it was really clear to us in starting Alarm Will Sound that that wasn't going to work for us. And that, you know, to have the kinds of careers that we wanted to have and have the kind of impact that we wanted to have, that, you know, we had to do more than that. And that we had to, you know, make it our jobs, not just to, like, play what's on the page in front of us, but be thinkers about the experience we're giving the audience, and you know, evangelists, and be thinking really intentionally about what is the whole experience we're giving to an audience, and how do we bring them inside the music, and help, you know, try to get them excited about it in the way that we are.
Thank you.
I think Wolfgang Riem was a great composer, but not so well known in America. How did that collaboration come about?
It was Carnegie Hall. We, you know, we were pairing composers who had really different music, but really interesting personal stories. And that's always been that, you know, that, that actually, you know, it was a single concert we did, but it speaks to a larger ongoing passion of mine and the group's, which is finding ways to bring really different music together into a single experience. And also like using storytelling as a way to, enrich a musical experience. So that, those are themes we come back to again and again and again in our works. And that was an early instance of it, was the show called Odd Couples. And the inspiration was the friendship between Frank Zappa and Edgar Varèse. So we did these like memorized staged performances of, you know, Zappa's Dog Breath Variations on Uncle Meat, and Edgar Varèse's Integral. That was sort of the centerpiece of the program. And then one of the other pairs was Adams and Ream, because John Adams had performed Ream's music and they had a friendship. And so that was the context in which Carnegie Hall commissioned this Wolfgang Riem piece for us called Will Sound, named after us.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that's super cool. That's a great idea for a concert as well.
Yeah, that's a really fun show. That was a really fun show. Let's do that again sometime.
And with Steve Reich, so did he come to you with this idea of rewriting songs from Radiohead?
He did. Yeah, so Steve had been talking for years about writing a piece for us. And then we were all together at this wonderful, sadly now defunct, new music festival in Poland called Sacrum Profanum. You know, Steve was there and Bang on a Can was there and Johnny Greenwood was there from Radiohead. And we were all hanging out and Johnny Greenwood did a performance of one of those counterpoint pieces, Steve Reich's Electric Counterpoint, which is for, you know, electric guitar with tape, with recordings of, you know, other electric guitars. And he gave the greatest performance of it. And Steve was so taken with it and didn't know Radiohead and was like, tell me about this group Radiohead, and got to know their music and got really excited about it. And then he called me up and said, hey, I've got a new idea for a piece for you. What if I write a piece that reworks music from Radiohead? And I was like, hell yes, sold. We were all of us in Alarmal Sound were so excited about that idea. And yeah, that became Radio Rewrite.
All right, let's talk about the album that's coming out in November that you know will come out right about the same time as the show.
Yeah. Well, this piece is very dear to my heart, our hearts. Dunica has been a collaborator of Alarmal Sound since, for like 15 years now. I got to know Dunica through Crouch Ensemble, which was an Irish group that he founded, that he invited me to come conduct. And with them, I premiered and then recorded the piece that became Dunica's breakout hit, Bragu's Boss, which means love and death in Irish, and recorded with the wonderful Irish Shondo singer, Irlo Leonard. We released that. I recorded that with Crash Ensemble on Nonesuch, and it is an extraordinary piece, and I'm so proud of that recording, and it became a real like breakout hit and Dunica's calling card. That experience, I went to my friends in Alarmal Sound. I said, hey, you all need to check out this guy. We should work with him. And so we began a project with Dunica that led to Alarmal Sound's first album with him called The Hunger, which was a piece of Irish that Dunica wrote as a reflection on the Irish famine. Dunica became very close with all of us. He married one of us. Our violinist, Courtney, is Dunica's wife now. And so Dunica is very, very dear to the group. And this project arose in the most lovely way, which is, Dunica came to me and said, I want to write you guys a big piece. I had this vision for, an hour-long major instrumental work for Alarmal Sound. And, he'd been writing a lot of opera at that point and was really excited. And I actually had worked on some of those operas and recorded one, The Last Hotel. And Dunica was really excited to return to instrumental music and to just like write a big, large scale instrumental work. And he applied for a Guggenheim grant to support the work, and got it. And so this piece happened. And he's dedicated it to me, which is very meaningful to me, and I'm very grateful for that.
Thank you.
So, you know, it's a piece that's very, very dear to me and to all of us in Alarmable Sound. It's big. It's an hour long. It is in 12 movements, built around the cycle of a year. Each movement is a month starting in November. Sorry, wrong. Each movement is a month starting in December, ending in November. And the title, Hibernia, is the Roman name for Ireland, which means land of winter. And so, you know, that became the title for the piece. And it is meant to be a kind of reflection on the changing of light season over the course of a year in Ireland, starting with December and ending with November. But it's also, and this, it took me a little longer to understand this, the piece on a more metaphorical level is also about the cycle of life. And so, as different ideas return in the different months, the different movements, which are named after months, they have different energies and trajectories, and those reflect on the cycle of life, with, you know, the early movements having a more youthful quality, and then there being a feeling of old age in the final movements. And that's very Donica. Donica's work, you know, Gragus Boss, his breakout hit means love and death. And, you know, Donica is a deep guy who thinks about the big things in life. And, you know, death is a reoccurring theme in his work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the piece, I mean, it's a big piece, not only, you know, in terms of length and conception, but it's big sonically too. I mean, it's like,
yeah.
You know, texturally, it's you know, I mean, the textures are very clear, but they're very thick as well. And it seems, you know, I didn't hear all of it, but by listening to several movements, that seems to be a recurring theme, that it's just kind of this big sound that he's going for.
Yeah, absolutely. Donica is, he's a really good orchestrator. In a way that is unusual for a lot of the music we play, like if you sort of just page through the score, you know, in most, you know, hour long pieces, there'll be sort of extended passages where, you know, lots of players are sitting out or whole sections are sitting out. And there's a bit of that in Land of Winter. But if you look through the score, you'll see like a lot of people play a lot of the time. Like he's very frequently using a lot of the ensemble. And so it is like, it is rich and I was going to say thick, but it isn't. I mean, Donica, he's really skillful in his use of the instruments. And so while he is like drawing on most of the band much of the time, I think there's also like a real clarity to it. And, you know, he's using us to create these colors and these layers of texture and harmony and light and shadow. But I think it also is like very clear music.
Thank you.
Something that Donegal's often doing, which I think is why that works so well, is he's working with the overtone series, you know, which is the fundamental physical reality of music and how music works. So, you know, in each instrument in the texture is just playing one of those harmony, one of those overtones. So, you know, every instrument is assigned an overtone in the harmony. And then he creates these, you know, each instrument swells independently, which creates a, it's kind of like a filter sweep effect. Like if you, you know, played like a low C on the cello and did a filter sweep where you, you know, swept the filter across the spectrum of that cello and brought out, you know, first like lower frequencies and then middle frequencies and higher frequencies. Donica is drawing on a kind of bang on a can rhythmic energy and then these ideas from European spectralism. And so I think that, you know, and then Irish music. I think, you know, that the sort of like origin, musical origin story of Donica, to me, like goes back to those roots in, you know, European spectralism, American minimalism, and Irish music. And as he's gotten more sophisticated and more experienced and sort of deeper into his own world, the seams between those become harder to see. You know, the music becomes more just Donica. But I think if you look back at Donica's early work, you can more clearly see those roots.
We have time to listen to one more track from this new album, Land of Winter by Donica Dennehy, performed by Alarmal Sound. And I'm going to play May. Remember that each movement is a different month in the year. This is May, and I didn't have time to play it from the interview, but Alan told me a great story that the ensemble was actually rehearsing this piece without pitch. So they were just rehearsing the rhythms, very complicated rhythms, and they were rehearsing the rhythms by shouting. Donica liked it so much that he decided to change the piece and keep it in. So you'll hear that here. So that will be the last piece that we hear on the program today. Big thanks to Alan Pearson for talking to me. Thanks to Alarmal Sound for all the great work that they're doing. Do check out their new album, Land of Winter, and all of their other albums wherever you get your music. Relevant Tones is a production of Access Contemporary Music, a nonprofit organization with the mission of providing equitable access to the transformative power of music making. Find out more at acmusic.org. On behalf of Relevant Tones, I'm Seth Bosted. Thanks so much for listening.
Thank you.